Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Karen, Kristen, and Laura as we celebrate our 100th episode. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
All right, everyone's here. We're going to talk a little bit about some old Once Upon a Time stuff, some new Once Upon a Time stuff, and just a little bit about the podcast because we can celebrate it. We deserve it. So if you want to get in touch with us and talk about your favorite Onceable or Once Upon a Time moments from our past 100 episodes, you can contact us on Twitter at Onceable or comment on this post on Hypeable.com. So I want to know, before we do anything else, if anyone wants to tell me a good story from the old days of Onceable before this straggler made her way to the podcast.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think, like, I know I was an original podcast member, but I'm trying to think, Karen and Kristen were, I think the original people was Jesse and me and Selena. And was it both of you guys or was it just one of you guys?
Jen was on the original. I was not. I joined I think it was like episode 17. It was like right after the first season ended. I joined for Wonderland.
Oh, gosh. Back in those days. Oh, my God. Yep.
I was an original one as well. And fun fact, this was actually the first ever podcast that I did.
Oh, that's why
I was really nervous. I was really nervous about it. You should have seen. I would oh my God, this is so embarrassing. But why not? It's the 100th episode. I would take the show notes and I'd print them out so that I could have them right in front of me. And I'd make little notes. And I was a very anxious person. I'm still a very anxious person. But when it came to podcasting, I'd never done it before. It was like having an oral exam. I was so afraid all the time.
Can I reveal a little secret about what just happened with these show notes? Karen filled them in literally 3 minutes ago.
Ta-da!
Clearly, Karen has gone way. This angst.
Look at how far we've come.
When you do 4 or 5 podcasts a week, you get over it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I know.
Sooner or later, we'll have you on Hangoutlander, and we're all a little tipsy when we're on that one. So that actually takes, podcasting, or in that case, Google Hangout casting or whatever it's going to be next, to a whole new level, because we're all not at our most articulate always on there, but it's fun.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It's been such a fun ride.
The only funny moment I can think of ever, and I'm not even sure, I think this made an outtake somewhere. I don't even know what episode it was, but there was one episode that we recorded that I had just gotten my dog, who is now 8 years old. And when I got him, he was 4. And he took a running leap at me and knocked me over in the middle of the podcast. And I thought I had muted out, and I hadn't. The dog tackled me, and all of a sudden, the other people on the podcast hear, and then stop, no, and then I came back on and I was like, sorry. And I thought I was on mute, and I thought I was saying sorry because I hadn't said anything in a while. Meanwhile, they all were wondering, do they call 911, what's going on? And I was it's just tackled by a 13-pound Bichon Frise. Yeah.
And that's not the first time that Scully's done that.
No, it's not. Sadly.
That's been a repeat offense for him.
Yes. Yeah. It was pretty funny. And actually, when we do video stuff, every now and then I'll be sitting there and all of a sudden Scully will leap into the frame. We've been doing Hangoutlander, and there are episodes where you'll hear somebody talking and then you'll hear somebody going, and oh my God, there's a dog. And Scully will be in the video, the webcam, being I wonder what this is. Can I lick it? What does this do? So yeah, that was probably the only totally zany moment on my end.
Besides forgetting I'm on mute and delivering an entire address to no one, I really haven't had any weird mutable moments. On other podcasts I have, where all of a sudden I'll be asked for my breakfast order if I want anything, and then I'm, deciding what cheeses I want on my eggs. That happened on a podcast episode one time.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So,
even though we're 100 episodes in, we don't learn anything. The mistakes keep rolling and they get funnier. But we do have a few other favorite Once Upon a Time or Onceable related moments. And I know mine has just really been having this forum to break down Once Upon a Time and really just unpack a lot of the issues, and especially just walking away every week feeling really validated in my hatred of Rumpelstiltskin. So I just want to thank you guys for supporting me and having my back and allowing me to hate the character so much.
You are so welcome.
We support you and all of your Rumpel dislike / hate because, yeah. We're there.
And so, Kristen, just go on with yours, because I feel like it's a little bit of a branch off of that.
I was trying to think of, like, Onceable related things, but the moment in Once Upon a Time history that kind of comes back to me is basically the moment where Rumpel was at his peak, the peak of his character, and I thought, good things are going to come, I know exactly what's going to happen, and then Rumpel just started to slide downhill for me, and that was at the end of the Neverland cycle, when he stabbed Pan and himself, and they both disappeared. I really just thought that he had made the sacrifice, and that, you know, that either we were going to see him again, but it wasn't going to be in the same, you know, the same way, or we might never see him again. Like, he may have given his life to save other people. And I thought it was a beautiful moment for Rumpel. When he came back, ever since then, it's just been selfish act after selfish act after selfish act. He's never been the same for me. That was the height of Rumpel on Once for me.
Oof, yeah. That Neverland arc, man, it comes back to haunt me in, like, the worst way. That was the first season I was at Hypeable for Once Upon a Time in full coverage. And I remember just not liking it at all when it was happening, and just thinking every week, why did I volunteer to write for this site? Well, I'm not liking the show I signed up for. And then I came on Onceable, and, like, we started talking about it and unpacking it. And by the end, I think that Neverland turned out to be one of my favorite places that the show has ever gone, which is interesting because it was so bad in the moment.
Kristen and I were just talking about that the other night, that, like, while we were in Neverland, all of us had, you know, things to say about it. But looking back, it changed the show in a lot of ways. And maybe that's, you know, for better or for worse. But it's definitely something that you can't ignore within the canon of the show. And I think that in and of itself is kind of amazing, but like I said, for better or for worse, at least there have been other bigger things to complain about since then, so we give Neverland a little bit of a pass now.
Yeah, that's very true. It is, it's like a highlight of the show now compared to some of the other stuff we've had to deal with.
Neverland has my favorite episode of Once of all time in it, which is Dark Hollow, where they all had to tell their secrets, and I've always liked that episode. I don't know why. It's just really good fun, and it's a good Hook and Emma moment. You've got Neil in there, and it's one of my favorites.
That was really good. It's so much better than, like, them standing on the edge of that cliff in the underworld, confessing and trying to make up for lost time. Oof, that was
I don't want to talk about the underworld.
Sorry, like, that's, no more. I will put
that's our 100th episode
behind us.
Turn.
Yeah, I do agree with you, though. That was probably the most solid episode of the series. I loved that episode. And then right after that, very shortly after that, was when we lost Balefire as a character. And I remember at the time it was a rough season for me, because it felt like every ship I shipped in life just was sinking like crazy. Like, right after that, we lost Will and Alicia on The Good Wife, and we lost Neil and Emma is a ship. I'm like, is anybody else going to torpedo any of more of my ships this season? So I remember that, but still, I still liked watching, but I remember going, I cannot believe you killed my end game ship. That was like a painful moment for me on Once Upon a Time, but I did love that whole season. And I was so amazed that that's where the show went after getting set up to think, oh yeah, Neil's going to be around for a while. Ha ha ha. No, he's not.
Yeah, so. Really, that was the first, like, real moment where I felt that they pulled the rug out from under us, and he was really gone. Like, he was dead, and we weren't going to see him again. Although we did, like, see him in
like flashback,
the weird flashback. Yeah,
they didn't, like, totally do the haha, not, you know, just kidding, he's really here because, like, we've made up a spell. Yeah.
And Karen, I want to touch on your favorite moment, just because it's so cute and very Karen-esque.
That's interesting. You might need to expand on that. But I can kind of see that it's sort of like innocent, because when you think all the way back to season one and even season two in a lot of ways, those initial feelings of seeing how all the stories are connected, to find out that Rumpelstiltskin is also the Beast, is also the Crocodile, the way that the different stories come together and the people are related in the family tree. And I mean, we joke about the family tree a lot because it is very complicated and very interbred. But other than that, it's so, like, this show really built this world with a solid foundation. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's really where I was going with it. It was just, here, I can just always imagine you watching these things for the first time, because you always describe it as you're watching it with Kristen, and I think it's so cute. So I would really love to watch an episode with you one time, a new one. That way I can see your initial reaction.
We might have to do that someday.
I know, we should. But speaking of initial reactions, we do have an episode to recap this week, which is season 6, episode 7, Heartless. It also kind of ties into what we've been talking about. We really got to go back to the start of things and Once Upon a Time sort of hit a reset button and rehashed a very old storyline, but in a new way, and brought the Evil Queen back with some purpose, which I always appreciate. So let's run down our thumbs up, thumbs down for Heartless, and we'll start with Karen.
I'm going to go with thumbs up, actually. The first half of the episode was kind of slow and boring to me, but the second half really brought it together, and there are some moments that I think really changed things, and I appreciated that a lot.
Awesome. And Kristen, how about you?
It's a thumbs up for me. I like what they did with the same old, you know, Snow Charming, Evil Queen stuff. You know, it could have easily just been another rehashing of it, but we have a twist on it now, and it's going to complicate matters to go, you know, going forward. So, yeah, I like this episode. Thumbs up for me.
And Laura, what about you?
I'm going to go with thumbs sideways on it. I think I feel about the same way that Karen does, only for me it was more of a thumbs sideways than a thumbs up. I did definitely like the second half of it better, and I was like, oh, we've gone from the Lady Hawk plot line twist. If you've ever seen the movie Lady Hawk, it's almost the same exact premise. Matthew Broderick, and can't think of who else is in the movie right now, but it's almost the same premise where one can be awake and the other one's asleep, and I want to see what they end up doing with it, but it's the same premise.
Yeah, I am going to go with thumbs up, mainly because if you've been listening to Once Bowl, you know that I'm kind of obsessed with this Regina and Rumpel thing, and it went to a whole new level. But beyond that, I really like what they did with Snow and David playing into their character strengths, which is, you know, sacrifice for the greater good, while also giving them an adorable meet cute without them actually, you know, seeing each other, and then also tying their whole lives basically back together within like a 20-minute recap and giving the Evil Queen a purpose. So I'm interested to see what her like true end game is. Like, is she now just going to sit in the mayor's office and watch them like be tortured, or is she actually going to have a bigger plan beyond this? But it'll be an interesting place for Snow and David to explore who they are without each other.
Can I just say, as the person who was like, oh, I think Robert Carlyle looks kind of hot now with his short hair, and I'm the one who is sort of kind of feeling the sexier looking version of Robert Carlyle, and then I saw Regina Rumpel kiss, and I was literally curled in a little ball watching the episode going, oh God, no, what? Stop, don't.
Laura, I even put in the show notes, all the ladies want Rumpel, that damn hair, maybe Laura was on to something.
I mean, I will tell you, I loved Rumpel sexy, and I'm not saying still find Robert Carlyle sexy, but that maybe it's just because she is so outlandish, and not, and I really don't want to see like a makeout between Mr. Gold and the Evil Queen, because that would just be not Mr. Gold, but like really Rumpelstiltskin in the full gold makeup. I don't even want to see that. That would be even more horrifying to look at. But I was I was watching this scene, and I've seen Robert Carlyle in different movies and different television shows play a romantic scene, and he's quite good. I would not objecting to being on the receiving end of that. But I'm looking at it and I'm going, God, that has got to be one of the most awkward looking TV movie stage kisses I've seen in like forever. I was like, the two of them look like they want to be anywhere but there. It is so awkward. And I'm going, ew. I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot possibly have been the only one with that ew reaction. I mean, please tell me somebody else had the same reaction.
I have very
mixed
emotions.
Love it.
Okay. I didn't love it. I don't need you to be as visceral as me, but I needed somebody else to be vaguely disturbed by it.
Oh, I'm definitely on team disturbed. I had very similar reactions to some of the others when Regina kind of talked to them about it. So yeah, sorry, Brittany.
Oh, and when we get to our favorite quotes, like I'm going to tie my quote in that sort of in a way. You'll see what it is in a minute, but it'll be funny.
Oh, you can go for it because we're there.
Okay, so my favorite is not so much of a quote, but it's like what Henry didn't say when that news was being delivered that like was just like you could see Henry just going to go say something and he opened his mouth and nothing came out. And there was like a giant WTF thought bubble over his head at that moment. And at the same time, he looked like he was going to excuse himself to Hurl. So my favorite quote is everything that went through Henry's head and he didn't say. So that's my favorite quote this episode.
Kristen, you play right on that as well with yours. So why don't you go ahead?
Yes, my favorite quote is actually more of a favorite look. When Regina was like telling them about what was going on between the Evil Queen and Rumple, Hook's face when she tells them, and then Emma looks, the camera goes to Emma and she says, Regina, oh my God. And it just slayed me. That was genius. And yeah, just, oh my God. It's so great.
Yeah, mine was actually like in that same moment, but unrelated to the reaction. It was just Emma's nonchalant like way of when they were talking about the sapling. And she goes, there must be like some magical way to find it. And it's just like, at this point, everyone's just, you know, resigned to the fact that, oh, we'll probably be able to use a tracking spell or sprinkle some dust and hop backwards 3 times and it'll reveal itself and we'll find it. So I just really loved her passiveness about being able to find the sapling within that 12-hour window. And
it's like, okay, here's our problem. Now we just need the magical solution. It's out there somewhere. Somebody find it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone, Bell didn't find it in the books. Okay. Maybe Blue's got it. Someone will present. I'm not worried about it. This time means nothing. And then Karen, I think I want to start with your favorite quote and then kick off the discussion there and maybe move a little bit backwards because I really want to talk about Bell.
Yeah. I was so proud of her this episode. She's been doing fantastic lately, but her whole speech at the end to Rumple after she kind of realizes, you know, what's going on with Rumple and the Shears and the Evil Queen was fantastic. But there was one line in particular where she says, if you want your son's love, don't take it. Be worthy of it. That is Rumple's entire problem and has been his entire problem his entire life. And it's sad that he still hasn't realized that. But I'm so glad that Belle is angry. And I'm so glad that she's not giving him any space to weasel his way in there. She is mad at him and she walks out on him. And I think that is the strongest thing that she could do in this moment.
You know what? I agree with you on that to a point. I agree that I really like that she stood up with him. I really just wish it had been for reasons other than what it made it look like. It's because Zelina told her that he was cheating on her. Like, I just wish it had been because you're a manipulative jackass, period. Not because, like, I felt they made it look like it was tinged with jealousy. And it probably was. But I just felt like Belle is a stronger person than that. And I felt like it kind of almost diminished her to be like, oh, well, she's having this jealous moment and that's why she's saying it. Like, I just wanted it to be more of a no, because she knows he's an ass. Like I felt like they deprived us a little bit of that moment.
I don't necessarily agree with that because she kind of goes there and yes, the moment that gets her there is the fact that Zelina told Belle what was actually going on with the Evil Queen. And I think that Belle just is tired of secrets and things being left to stew. So she chose that moment to go there and be like, you know, I don't care what you're doing in your spare time with whoever you want to do it with. But I did find out about the Shears from Zelina as well. So there was that other piece of information that Zelina did deliver to Belle in order to get her there. And she kind of swept the whole, you know, this love triangle issue under the rug and really addressed what was at the heart of the matter, which was the fact that you're not using something on our son that he can't even consent to, and you're changing his whole life without my consent or his consent. And that's just not okay.
So here's a question when it comes to like Rumpel. I feel like a lot of times when people have like this epiphany to change their life, or sometimes if somebody's suffering from addiction, they say frequently that that person has to hit rock bottom a lot of times before they're willing to even like admit they have a problem and admit they seek help. And I feel like on a certain level, I wonder if Rumpel has actually ever hit that ultimate rock bottom. Like, I mean, I feel like he's come close, but I wonder, has he hit that rock bottom enough want to make that true and utter turnaround? Like, I felt like if nothing else, the fact that his first son died would be like that rock bottom for him, but apparently it wasn't enough. And I'm just wondering, do you guys think there is a rock bottom, a low that is so low that Rumpel would hit that would make him want to change, or he'll never hit that rock bottom?
I think what it's going to take for him to hit that rock bottom is to actually lose Belle and that unborn baby. But even then, I think he wouldn't learn. He wouldn't try to make himself better, because then everything is gone. So there's no magic to bring them back. There's no nothing. And I don't know if there really is a rock bottom, because I thought that it was going to happen when he took the dagger to Neil's grave and had that whole nice little moment before he went on his honeymoon with Belle to the castle. And that proved to be absolutely just meaningless words that he said in front of a tombstone. I don't know. Yeah. Karen and Kristen, what do you think?
I think the only thing at this point that could drive him to actually put Belle first and their child first, I don't necessarily know if it's rock bottom, but if he lost his ability to do magic and there was no way to get it back, if he became as normal a character, as normal a person as any other storybook character. So, you know, Snow and Charming, who don't use magic on a, you know, daily basis and can't manipulate people with it. If he was forced to live his life like that and there was no way to get it back, I feel like then we'd see a human Rumpel who has to like accept his own mortality and has to accept that, you know, he doesn't have power anymore and that he can't lord it over people. I feel like that's the only way he's ever going to put Belle first. He's had that taste of power, and as long as he has a chance at getting it back, he's never going to let that go.
I would really hate it if somehow he lost his power and that's what it took to make him become a better person, because I feel like that would be such a cop-out. Not that that's not, like, a good idea or an interesting idea at its core, but, like, I would be really mad at the show, and I think it's only because I've lost so much hope in that character. I've lost all my hope in that character. Laura, you were asking if, you know, there is a rock bottom for Rumpelstiltskin. I don't think there is. I don't think there's anything that could happen that hasn't already happened in one form or another to make him become a better person. I think this is who he is, and speaking to the show, they either need to embrace that absolutely, or they need to kill him off, because at this point, I'm just annoyed all the time.
The only thing I can think of that they could do to him, and I don't know. There's the one thing I think they could do to him, and they haven't done it yet because a lot of it has been external. What if they literally took everything from Rumpel? They take his magic irrevocably, with having no power to get it back and to take all of the belongings in his shop from him. I'm wondering if that would change him, if he was truly and utterly, because he's, as much as he loves people or the ideas of people, he truly loves his things. I wonder if all his things irrevocably taken from him, and all his magic was irrevocably taken from him, because in the end, that's what he's always gone back to, is relied on all of these external crutches. I'm wondering if you stripped him of all of that without a loophole, with truly no way to get it back, would he change?
I feel like that's the same thing as taking a serial killer and taking all of their weapons away from them and saying, okay, you're gonna change now. It's hard for somebody at their very core. Like, I'm not saying people can't change, but he's been given so many opportunities to change that I really don't feel like at this point he can. Or if he does, it's going to feel disingenuous to me, at least.
Yeah, he'd have to make an actual sacrifice, not a supposed sacrifice, like him being separated from everyone to save something, or him being sent back to another land or whatever. He'd have to actually make a sacrifice in order to redeem himself in any way for me. And I just don't think he has that in him.
Plus, I don't think that punishment necessarily without a bit of sacrifice on Rumpel's part is going to do anything to him at this point, because he's already been banished to New York and he found his way back. I know that you were saying if there were no loopholes, but then he's just not an interesting character. Then at that point, you should really just kill him off or remove him from the show, because he's not going to bring anything to the show at that point. Because even if he does change, I don't think it's going to be interesting enough to justify keeping him around. After everything that we've witnessed, Belle would just be so much better off without him at that point. So I would just see you later, Robert Carlyle. I do think that it's an interesting question to consider, is what would it take to get this character to change? And from what we can see, it's probably nothing. And even if he did change, I don't think any of us would really feel it. You know, it's we've been let down too many times by him. And luckily, as we saw in this episode, Belle is feeling the same way. And I think that that's interesting. She also has another point in her speech to him where she says, if you were pure evil like the Evil Queen, then I could forgive you because you don't know any better. And he does know better. So it's that weird.
She just slayed, and I love her so much right now.
I know. And I'm just so nervous because I have to stop reading interviews with Eddie and Adam, because they're like, yeah, it's a rocky road for the both of them, but they both do love each other. And I'm like, don't bring this back. The worst thing you could do for the show is to bring this relationship back to making them be in love, because we've written him off. You can tell if you've ever listened to any other episode, including this one. We've pretty much written Rumpel off at this point in terms of deserving Belle. So I'm kind of hoping that they really don't redeem him, and that's just my personal opinion, but I'm kind of glad he hasn't been on screen that much, and when he is on screen, I'm just really screaming about it, because it's weird and interesting and not everyone's cup of tea. But what else do we have going on in this episode? I can't believe we talked about Rumpel for that long. I feel a little weird.
I know, I'm in shock. Like, sometimes we just kind of, you know, shove him under the rug and don't say anything about him. But, you know, this episode, those are some really good questions, and questions that I think will carry on throughout the whole series. Like, they're big picture questions, and those are important to tackle.
Yeah, and there are a lot of big picture questions that are set up in this episode, but also some that are kind of, again, like we do with the Rumpel stuff, swept under the rug. And one of those is Hook and Emma having that discussion in the Evil Queen's vault, where Hook is like, no, you just, you know, remember who you are. You're the product of true love and the savior, and that's cool. And Emma's hand stops trembling. But the whole problem that is set up in this season is she doesn't know who that is or what that means. And so by telling her to just accept it as a title, I just felt so cheated in that moment, and it wasn't deserving of the sweeping romantic music and Hook can save everything with a great story, because I don't think that they took a huge step back from all the progress we made with Archie earlier in this season, where Emma is finally questioning what it means to be the savior. What does it mean to be the product of true love? What say do I have in that? And Hook's basically like, you have no say. You have to accept it. And now we're moving on and you're done shaking. I don't know how you guys felt about that moment, but I took it that way.
I think I wasn't like super bothered by it, but I wasn't moved by it either. So I definitely see your point. Like, I see why it annoyed you so much. I think I more or less just took it as a, you don't need to be worried about your parents right now because they are true love and they made you. So they will figure it out. Like, whatever this is, they are okay on their little side quest. They have, you know, they've made it through thick and thin before without any problem, even before you were around. So they can handle this. Like, more or less, that was what I got from it. Not that she was, you know, this be all end all and the most powerful and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I just kind of saw it as your parents are going to be fine because she was worrying about them so much and that was causing her shaking. So I just kind of assumed that's what he was trying to do, was just calm her down.
I think I just read a little bit more into it because I was over the snow story at that point. I was sort of like taking a step back and I was like, oh, they're going to give us something interesting here. But it was definitely about snow in that moment. And I do see that. So I think I unpacked it a little bit too much for my own good.
Hey, it's all good.
I think it's because I want more for Emma's story. And I was looking for it in that moment. I'm like, oh, good, we're going to make progress here. And then they didn't. But it did have an ulterior motive that I just didn't consider. But that's okay. That's why I have you guys. What else did we have going on here? I'm trying to wrap up all the little loose stuff before we move into the big picture. Oh, there was a dog. A really adorable dog.
I just saw that in the show notes, and I was like, oh my god, I love that she made that at its own point.
Its own point. Just, dog, all caps, exclamation point. We need to talk about it.
Its little floppy ears and its bushy tail. It was so cute.
His name was Wilby. He's adorable, and he's not very good at finding sheep before they die, but that's okay. It's fine. We forgive the dog because he's so cute.
Everyone's a work in progress.
Everyone, even Wilby.
Aww.
But not Rumple. He's not a work in progress. There is no progress.
No, there is no
progress. No more progress.
So Wilby comes to us because we were in a flashback where David and Snow, or Charming and Snow, or whoever and Snow are meeting for the first time, but not actually ever seeing each other. And so I feel like that was a really long explanation for, like, how we got to that random memory that the sapling gave them and how we got to the sapling. They're just like, oh yeah, they didn't meet, but from the very beginning, they were true love and they were destined to always find each other, even if they weren't aware that that's what they were doing. It was cute. It served a purpose. It got us through the whole mission to find this magical object that ended up meaning nothing. I'm not really sure what it would do besides trap the evil queen in a tree, maybe. Sort of like they did with, Merlin. You know how they, like, trapped him in that random tree and they couldn't get him out? I feel like this thing would do the same thing. However, it was crushed before we could figure out what its purpose was. What did you guys think of the flashback, though, in general?
I kind of liked it, to be honest.
There's a certain magic to that Charming and Snow early days that's just fun and works. I think they have just so underutilized the connection between them in the present storyline that they don't have that great connection, that spark. It's so fantastic in those flashback scenes. And it just, I don't think they get the material to let it happen in the current scenes. There's not an energy and a spark and a fun. There's a, okay, here we go. I mean, they almost seem tired in the present storyline. I really think they have more energy and fun in the past.
I totally agree with that. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that they, and maybe that's changing given the end of the episode, but they don't have a whole lot to deal with in the present. I mean, they do, but they're a pair and it's very like we can take on the whole world kind of thing. Whereas in the past, first of all, Ginny Goodwin as Snow in the past is fantastic. I always like when she puts on that wig and she gets her cloak and it just really fits so well for her. But they have so much more to conquer back then, and that's what makes it interesting. You know that they win in the end, but you want to see how. And right now, it just feels like they're checking things off the list, like Purple Snow Monster or Purple Smoke Monster defeated, Snow Monster defeated, and it just, it's boring. I don't want it to be boring, but it is. And like I said, though, the twist at the end hopefully is going to bring us something much more interesting for them.
Yeah, I think it sets up the opportunity for them to cut to their random stories a lot more. The storylines where we sort of do have them in the background and they're only good for, hey, we need some inspiration. Can you, like, run upstairs and give Henry a good speech about hope? Or, hey, can you take me in your pickup truck down the road and give me a good inspirational speech about hope on the way there? I feel like that's what they're reduced to. And so I've been sort of breaking down all of the ships on the show, and I've been putting off writing about the Charmings for so long just because I feel like there's nothing to write about. They're just not interesting. Now I feel like they might start to be a little bit more interesting again. And, you know, it's not all about Emma's needs have to come first or someone else's needs have to come first. I mean, hell, Neil's needs never come first. So now, you know, they'll have to deal with who they are apart from one another. And I think that that's going to be a really interesting situation to explore. So, yeah, I definitely agree. I did enjoy the flashback a lot. Last week's episode, we were finishing up by saying how they would handle the split heart deal. So instead of just one of them living with the embodiment of the other inside of them, unfortunately, that did not come true. But
damn,
I know. I was so looking forward to that. At least David acting like Snow. I really had that in the bank. Instead, we have this new curse where it's a sleeping curse, but while one's awake, the other one has to be asleep. I think that that really fed into what I really loved about this episode was the fact that the Evil Queen recognized that a fleeting moment of watching her, you know, the thing that she's dreamed about the most for all these years, which is seeing Snow's heart in her hand and crushing it, was not enough. She finally realized that this, I need to reassess my motivation here, and what I've always wanted might not be enough to cure years and years of pain and torture. So I'm going to inflict torture upon them. And I thought that now that I've described it like that, using the word torture, it sounds awful. But I want to say that I do think that that was a really cool move on the show's part for her to recognize that, you know, her motivation was... Karen is correct.
I'm so sorry. I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
She's copy editing my show notes as we're doing
this. I'm so sorry. I couldn't help myself.
And I knew it was her, even though it was an anonymous person in the doc. I knew it was her.
I was hoping you weren't going to see that.
It's okay.
Oopsie.
I love it. Anyway, yeah, so I thought that that played into Regina's character really well. And there was this moment, because I was rewatching this clip today, there's this moment where you see the Evil Queen say that I want to make you pay and experience the pain that I felt for all these years. And there's this look, they cut to Regina's face and she's in the crowd and there's this look of like, huh, like, yeah, that sucks, but it makes sense. Like something's clicking for Regina as well, because she hasn't really lost her entire connection with the Evil Queen. As we see, she knows how to feed into those desires that she once had and the get angry still. Like, she's not completely separated from this person. And so, yes, it's her friends and these people she's come to think of as family. But at the same time, she's like, I can recall that feeling and I get where she's going with this. So, yeah, what do you guys think of the new curse? Are you excited to see what happens? Are you kind of...
I'm into it.
Yeah, the first thing, this is terrible. The first thing that came to my mind was they both can't be working with all of their kids. Like, they just, Ginny and Josh just needed a break. Like, we're both on set all the time and our poor children. No, but like, I like the idea of it. I really like that it's not, that the Evil Queen didn't just kill them and, you know, have her revenge be this one moment and have it be gone and done, because that's not creative. That's just you know, finally manipulating them into giving her heart, you know, handing her their heart. I really like the angle she took with it. And I like seeing the sleeping curse and what, you know, what it's going to bring to the show. But my first instinct was, yeah, just like Ginny and Josh, yeah, they're just having trouble.
I definitely thought about that a little bit too. Not going to lie. I was like, oh, good. They need a break. They haven't really had time to, you know, have quality time with their two children. One last thing about this episode, because I'm going to be as bold as to say that it was my favorite scene that was ever shot on Once Upon a Time. I know Kristen likes the confessional rocks, but, and I do too. I just think that the imagery in the cold open for this episode, where that curtain is blowing and the Evil Queen shadow appears and Snow wakes up, was so cool. And then the entire confrontation that followed, I thought, was just so well done. What could have felt incredibly stale and rehashed, like, oh, well, you know, I watched you get a pony and it obeyed you. I felt the threat from the start of the episode, and I was just so excited about it. And I'm never excited about the beginning of Once Upon a Time. When ABC does that, like, whoa, intro, I'm like, oh no, here we go. It's like the America's Funniest Home Videos music, theme music, into the Once Upon a Time beginning. And usually I'm like, I'm getting ready to recap and I'm making sure my post is all set up and I'm like frazzled. And then that, I just was sitting there and I was watching it the whole time, and I wasn't worried about getting things done, and it was so good. And Once Upon a Time hasn't really been doing that for me lately, like, cinematically. They had that other moment in the beginning of this season, though, where Regina is in all black and she's sitting across from Snow and Emma, who are sitting in all white. And I think that they're, like, really, I'm not digging the story, but I'm really into the cinematography this season. And I don't know what that says about how I'm viewing this show this year, but I just loved it. I loved it so much. I thought it was so well done.
What I think is kind of funny too is they sort of have this up and down, sort of, like, they will shoot something so beautifully as that. Like, and I also thought just the whole green effect they did with Zelina's neck, I thought that looked pretty good and pretty cool. I didn't even mind the CGI crow on the mailbox, although it was very CGI'd. It wasn't, I mean, how else were they going to do it? It was fine. But then there's other weird moments where I'm oddly distracted by how cheap they go on stuff. Like Snow, when they did the flashback scene and she like picked up the rock to defend herself with. Now, she didn't actually end up throwing the rock. He disarmed her before she got to it. But I'm like, that's a big plastic rock. Like, there were just some moments I'm like, you're shooting in the forest. Couldn't you have just handed her a rock? Like, it was just were there no rocks around that day in Vancouver?
I noticed that too. Like, I was like, that's a polystyrene rock. Like, she just picked up a piece of foam. And it bothered me a little bit too. And then I was like, that doesn't matter. And I focused back on the show. Yeah, but little stuff like that, it can pull you out sometimes.
Yeah, it just really did pull me out of the scene. Although at the same time, I must say this, I mean, other weird things that have pulled me out of the scene in the past, I'm thrilled that they're not overly doing the Snow White-esque eyebrows on Jenny Goodman. I mean, there were days that I was like, my God, it's a show about her eyebrows. So I'm glad they've kind of stopped going that route. But it is kind of, I'm always kind of amazed how they can do something that is that good quality and then they lose it on other angles. Because as you said, it does pull me out of the scene sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that they're making some efforts somewhere, and I hope that they continue to make efforts in their storytelling, because some of these stories are getting really good and I don't want them to lose momentum, but they might, you never know. So that's about it for episode 100. I can't believe it. We're here. We made it. We'll be back for 101, just like any other week next week. And that episode is season 6, episode 8, I'll Be Your Mirror, where the gang gets the great idea to trap the Evil Queen in the mirror universe. And I know a lot of us saw Doctor Strange, so I was just thinking, like, wow, that makes sense, because in the mirrorverse, none of her magic will affect the real world. So, duh, totally got it.
That's... Well, and we just saw Mirror Master on The Flash the other day, and somebody got trapped in a mirror. So it's like, what is with the mirrors? Come on, guys.
Oh, and the last episode that I watched of The Crown right before coming on here was Smoke and Mirrors. So, whoa,
a lot of mirrors.
What is going on?
Mirrors are having a pop culture moment.
They are. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, so...
There's your feature idea for the week, Britt.
There is my feature idea for the week. Mirrors. A pop culture moment, question mark?
Yes. I'm going to be so disappointed if you don't write that
down. Well, now I feel the pressure. It's on. it'll distract me from the impending apocalypse of the American election tomorrow. I'm not excited. I want to trap myself in a mirror.
Or trap somebody else.
Yeah, so anyway, that's it for us. And next week, we will be back, just like we always are. And until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.